Hello and welcome in to another episode of Podcast 63. It is the summer episode one. There's been a fun kind of bout of Loyola news in the past really week. And we are here to talk about it. And it's kind of perfectly timed. We are going to record today anyway. And then this morning I saw some news on Twitter about the A10 releasing the in-conference schedule. So we're going to talk about that. For one, we have a couple former Ramblers, actually a few former Ramblers to talk about in Lucas Williamson, Ahir Ugwuok, and also Milton Doyle. And then we will be getting into breaking down the most recent commitments from the Reuben twins of Simeon in Chicago. So I think we're just going to get into it. I don't think we're going to do any breaks. I think we might as well just continue chatting. It's summer. It's more casual. Maybe you're listening to this on a beach or near a pool somewhere. I was just in a pool this weekend. It was great. How are you doing, Lou? I know you've been taking a couple vacations here and there, some quick ones. So how are you doing?
Yeah, the rafters gets pretty warm upstairs. So I had to just get out, and it was nice repping the Blurs. Nice to get people to be like, oh, I know that school. That was pretty cool from the different areas I've been to. So again, and not within the Midwest. I'm not just going up the coast to on Michigan, right? So it was fun to kind of see that. So, but no, also fun to see in the quiet days of summer to get notifications that players want to commit, and play Loyola Rambler basketball. And funny enough that we take a minute away from Twitter and then they commit then. So, I love how they do it, but again, excited to talk about the twins.
Did you end up getting any of Will Alcock's gear from his like player's trunk?
I saw that actually, and I was like, the amount of gear that went, congrats to him. Like, I love seeing that from any former player, but no, I did not. I was able to find a box up in the rafters, and I got my own. I got my own gear, but nice. But no, congrats to him. I think that's pretty cool.
I did end up, I picked up a warm-up shirt, the maroon Ooh. One. Yeah.
Okay, I saw one that had, like, the city skyline, which I thought was pretty dope.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just, like, it's just maroon. I think it just says Loyola Chicago. Like, it was one of the encore, like, you know, they wore it before games or whatever. Yeah. But, I picked that one up, and I needed more, like, maroon stuff. I had a bunch of, like, gray or, like, white, you know, Loyola stuff, and I outgrew my my early college days maroon Loyola stuff. So shout out to Will. That was cool. I'm glad to see he sold a lot of stuff. But on to more kind of pressing and important things. Let's talk about the schedule. I mean, I feel like that's kind of a good place to start. We do officially join the A10 on Friday, I believe, right?
Yes, we do.
Is it July 1st?
July 1st, yeah.
So it's cool. I didn't know. I was surprised, just I think like a lot of Loyola fans, that the schedule came out today. It feels kind of early, to be honest. I don't know that a bunch of conferences have done it yet, but
well, cool to yeah. I think it's the pairings, right? So I do think it's true. The pairings that come out first, and then it's the schedule. But I do think it's still even earlier than that. Now, is it? It's interesting. I even think because we have so many teams. And it's not like we're divided in an east-west kind of conference split, like maybe the Big Ten or something like that, or other conferences. So it is really interesting to get that information and be like, oh, there's nine home games. I think it's nine home games on the docket already, like boom. So that's something that really caught me. I was like, oh, this is happening right now. So very, very interesting to know in June what teams are playing come after December 31st, because actually I don't have to look into that, because if we recall, the Valley started that one game early in December to give the players a longer break during kind of Christmas break, winter break, and the New Year break. So actually I don't know if the A10 plays an early game. I'll have to look at the schedule while we speak here, but were you excited or shocked by any pairings to kind of kick it off there?
You know, I think we both kind of talked about this, but I think SLU and Dayton were like obvious ones to pair us with twice. I would be shocked if, you know, if both Dayton and SLU continue to be in the A10, which there's been some chatter on A10 talk about like that maybe not being the case, but they're just like very obvious pairings for us. I hope that Dayton and SLU are always on our schedule as home and homes every season. One, because it's convenient, right? Like, they're just obviously the most convenient for our squad. But also, like, consistently the past, like, you know, 8 or 10 years, Dayton for sure has been a top, top team in the A-10. And so has SLU. I mean, SLU's been consistently pretty good. They return a lot of players. So those two, I think Dayton and SLU are obviously, like, the best teams in the A-10 this year. But other than that, I wasn't too sure who they'd pair us home and home with. I do like the St. Joe's matchup, just as, like, a Jesuit-type thing. Plus, like, we lost them on a buzzer beater, whatever it was now, like 5 years ago, and still got a little bad blood for that. So hopefully we can give them a couple shellackings this year. Some other ones that caught my eye, glad to have VCU at home if we're going to play them either home or away. I want to have them here. I think they're going to be a really good squad. I think they're going to be tough. I think they play a very similar style to us. I think that's good to see at home. And then, I honestly, one of the ones I like to see that I might be able, like, want to go to is Duquesne. You know, we went to Pittsburgh for the March Madness game, and I really like Pittsburgh, and I would want to go back. And I think if Duquesne, I'm glad we're playing them away. One, because they're not all that great. You know, maybe they're a middle of the pack, like, A-10 team. But also, I kind of want to go visit Pittsburgh again. So that was kind
of, and hopefully, maybe get a win out of it, right? So
yeah.
What I think. You? Yeah, the biggest ones for me are Rhode Island at home was really interesting. So we're gonna get Archie Miller at home, which is gonna be interesting. VC, of course, that's an obvious one. Having that at home and not in away is very, very interesting, right? So that's gonna be a key game. A St. Louis home and home, that makes sense. St. Joe's. For those who don't know, I really wanted a Fordham away game. I got some family rivalry there. But I say the biggest game that I'm going to circle actually on my calendar is going to be the Richmond away. I think, and again, I don't know what Richmond team shows up, right? But it's just interesting. We've played Richmond so much recently, right? We had our own series with them pre-A-10. And we dealt with probably one of the best defenders in college basketball. And I'm pretty sure he's done, right? We're done with...
Actually, I don't know. That's a good question. I'll look it up.
Okay, but yeah, so the reason why is, like, that team is a team that found a way to win and made the NCAA tournament, and very excited to kind of have them high on their radar. So be interesting to see. But yeah, the traditional idea of Fordham, St. Joe's, and St. Louis even at home kind of makes me laugh, saying maybe we'll actually have Jesuit Jam against a Jesuit school. So maybe that's going to be a requirement of ours, that we at least have to play one A-10 Jesuit school at home, so we can get that figured out. So, no, absolutely excited. Really, really weird. One thing I have to note, though, kind of tying it in to the article that Loyola posted talking about this pairings, where that we only have two starters from that squad of last year's team coming back. But it makes sense. But it was just, like, weird to see two starters from last year being, like, the whole team's coming back except for Krut. So interesting, but excited to kind of put the pieces together on what the big puzzle of 2022 to 2023 is going to be for Loyola Ramblers.
Yeah, also Jacob Gilliard from Richmond has played 5 years. So,
I was about to say, if you told me he had another year, I'd be like, this guy just doesn't quit. Like,
it's like, I think Bryce, our Bryce Golden's brother, I forget his first name now, but the Golden brother that went to Richmond, I think he was around for 6 years, I think. Like, I think he took a red shirt or, like, had an injury year or something.
Gotcha. I think it was Grant.
Yeah, Grant, yeah.
I just remember being, like, a Gigi, like a Grant.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, we posted on our Twitter just some, like, general projections and, like, what type of games those might lead to, like, quadrant type games. The only website that has projections or for all the teams so far is Barktorvik, so that's the site we use. It does show that we'll get at least two quad one games, both of them being away games at Dayton and SLU. I think either one of those teams can be a top 25 team. And if that's the case, then when we get them at home, we'd get quad one games as well. lots of like borderline quadrant like 2 to 3 games that could go up as well. And then you only see 3 quad 4 games, which I didn't go back and check our season last year, but we definitely normally have like at least 5 or 6 quad 4 games in the Missouri Valley Conference. So just a different, you know, mindset, more quality games and lots of opportunities to win higher leverage type games. So something.
No, absolutely. I think the biggest thing then, just to, for people to put in picture of like the pairings, right, is being really intrigued how A-10. So A-10, actually, I just looked back. They did play. I'm looking at Richmond's schedule just for people to reference. So they do play. They do have a big break from the like December 22nd to the 30th. So there was 8 days, but I don't see any A-10 team was played earlier. So that was interesting. Okay. But. Who knows? Again, I think the biggest thing is that I was laughing with A-10 is that there's really no kind of structure. Like, yes, they play on Saturdays more than likely, right? But there were some times where they had that, like, A-10 Friday night basketball.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm excited for that. Like, I would love to be in a bar in Chicago for watching an away game if I can't make it. So that's going to be something interesting. Again, you're traditional, like, Tuesday, Wednesday. But there's a handful of times the A-10 really schedules a Friday night game, and that's – I find that pretty darn cool to think about a Friday night game. So I'll definitely be watching.
Yeah, it'd be fun to get a couple yeah, of those, maybe even exactly. One. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely make a point to watch that one.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's kind of what we have on the schedule. I was hoping to get like game, even like dates of games, but obviously that's not what happened. So hopefully we get that. I don't think it'll be soon, but maybe within the next like month and a half, it'd be fun to see like when we actually play some teams, so people can schedule away games to go see. I know I'd love to go to Dayton, see that stadium. I know it's rocking, and SLU's not too far, so maybe make a trip there. But yeah, that's kind of what we got for the schedule. Any last thoughts on the schedule, Lou?
Just non-con. I think that's the next thing. Speaking of schedule, we're looking more excited for to see how that shakes up.
Yeah, we'll keep our eyes. There was one game that got, is it Arkansas State or something like that? That got, someone released their schedule and we were on it. Let's see. That's scheduled for conference. I'm looking at Rambler Mania right now.
Okay.
I'll find it. It was just the other day. Oh, yeah, Central Arkansas. University of Central Arkansas. So, if that replaces our D2 game, that's awesome. you know, it's November 30th. They have the date on that already because Central Arkansas released it. Also, kind of someone makes a funny point. That is where Bobby Clintman's brother.
That's funny. I just thought about that too because we were so invested with Bobby for so long. But yes, that's where his brother goes. So very. Very small world-esque how that works out. But, no, I think that's – like you bring up a good point when we look at pairing, right, is that we play these less of a quad four games and we're playing quad one games, quad two games, right? So even though we're playing these tough kind of schedules, we don't need to or at least maybe should be playing D2 schools. And so I think this is a plenty enough school that – gets us, they're at the Division I level, right? Like, that's the baseline. Yeah, I know they're maybe not a Division I school for long. I think they've only been Division I for a while, but I think it's just the biggest point is that they are. Nothing against it, but those NIAI schools that we've sometimes played, or even, again, the last 2 years have been weird with COVID canceling things, but trying to just focus on getting D1 schools, I think, is key. But actually, just a quick point. I know you and I saw it, right? There was kind of that leak message, speaking of scheduling, with A-10 saying we want you to play top 100 schools.
That's right, yeah.
Away. It is interesting because I think that idea, if anyone's like gung-ho about it, it kind of does just hurt a little bit of integrity of like playing local schools, like at least especially for us, right? Like I love the UIC game, the DePaul games. And I am saying DePaul is not a top 100 school because they're just not. So it is kind of an interesting, like, how does that affect your future planning, right? Your future home and homes or your home and away, right? So really just kind of a lot of things can open up when you join a new conference, which we will Friday. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's all exciting stuff. And we'll probably by the next time there's a surprise summer episode in like a few weeks maybe, or a month at the most, like we'll probably have our non-conference by then, or a lot of it. So we'll be sure to talk about that the next time we're on.
Absolutely.
Moving on, let's talk about our guy Lucas Williamson. For people who might not know or need to be tied into the loop here, Lucas was in a lot of tryouts before the NBA draft. I think it was 15. I think he ended up getting to 14 or 15. And there was some talks that maybe he could go late in the second round. I don't know how legitimate that was, but I think there was a chance. And then after the draft, both of us were frantically refreshing our phones. I had always remembered it that like both Shams and Woj like would tweet out like 20 different guys signed at this team like minutes after the draft, and there really wasn't too many. I mean, I think
I 100% agree with that. There was there was a lot. See, here's the thing that was interesting. There was a lot of just saying who had the two-way player contract and less of this player signed with this. That's what I noticed, that they only mentioned who had a two-way player contract. So that was so I just thought they would shoot off a list.
Yeah, I remember the quantity being way more, but so I mean, I think it was probably like an hour or an hour and a half after the draft, I saw a message, and it was actually, I think, a local guy, WGN guy, I think, broke it, which is cool. That's who I retweeted, and then someone else picked it up, but that he had signed an Exhibit 10 deal with the Los Angeles Clippers. So I don't know what an Exhibit 10 deal is. I remember last year, a lot of guys were signing those when COVID was really bad.
Yep.
And like players were trying to get on, you know, they were trying to fill in their G League guys. And so I had always thought, oh, it's like a 10-day contract or 10-day trial in the NBA. That's not necessarily what it is. It's not a guaranteed contract for the whole year, but I believe they get paid like $35,000 throughout the season to remain with the team. There's like a certain amount of days, I think it's 60. If they stay with the G League team for 60 days, they get a $50,000. I don't know if it's a bonus or it gets paid out like as a salary, but there's like incentive for both sides to continue to like work together, because these guys then can play in the NBA for a short period of time, or their contracts, their Exhibit 10 contracts, can be reworked into a two-way contract. So for that reason, it does give both the team and the player incentive to like continue to work together. So for that reason, it's better than like a summer league or a G League, or like a practice invite, a summer league invite, and does kind of tell the player that they want you to play on their G League team. But like I said, it's not guaranteed. That's kind of what an Exhibit 10 contract is. It's definitely good for Lucas. I think this is great. I saw just one other point. I'll let you have the floor here. I saw a video and it was weird. I was searching on Twitter like for Lucas Williamson's name, which is what I was doing to see if he was going to get a contract. And there was a video like the next day. It looked like wherever Lucas was for the draft or that evening or something with some family. And it was him on the phone, I think to like his agent maybe. And he was explaining to the family and whatever media was there that it sounded like he had two finalists. It was the Clippers and the Grizzlies. And the Grizzlies did not offer him an Exhibit 10 contract, I believe. And they had they had both of their two-way contracts filled, whereas the Clippers, they still don't have a second two-way player, which is a roster, and they have like roster spots available. So it gives Lucas the ability, he was explaining, it gives him the ability to like fight for a two-way contract and still fight for a roster spot, which is kind of, I think, the most you could hope for, like as in Lucas's spot. So that's kind of what I know. Lou, I'm curious what you think about it all, and also if you just have any other tidbits that you picked up along the way.
Yeah, so I kind of want to just take it back so people would be like, well, what's the difference between this with, like, when Milt went to the Summer League, right? So Milt just had a Summer League invite. So wow. He wasn't guaranteed a lot of things. And again, I don't think any of these guys are really guaranteed things, right? Like, not to be a Debbie Downer or anything, but it's like they got to work. Like, there are some guys who could have a two-way contract, and I think they could be taken from it, and someone else gets a two-way contract. So it's really interesting. But I think this kind of shows a team. Again, just an example, the Grizzlies or the Clippers. Like, the Clippers were like, we want to offer you this Exhibit 10, while the Grizzlies were like, well, we can offer you a spot. That's what we can offer. And now some teams are just either stockpile, depth chart issues, right? Or some teams just really like someone. So we don't really know unless we're in that room with the front office, right? But seeing there's a chance, not just with a Summer League, but that there's a chance with the G League, I think that's phenomenal. I just a side note, I don't to this day ever know what happened with Milt in the G League. I think he did fantastic. There were points where he was leading scores, dropping 30 points. Regardless to that, from like a Loyola Ramblers experience, I think what more than 50% of every NBA player currently on a roster has spent some time in the G League, I think the stat is, or at least maybe one out of every four. Like, there's a high percent. The G League is definitely not what it was, in my opinion, 10 years ago. You could even say maybe 15, 20, right? It's definitely a bigger machine. It still needs to be developed better, but I think it gives guys chances like Lucas to be like, hey, you grind here, I think there's a chance. But also the Summer League. How cool is that to hear? I think the biggest thing was him sitting on the stage there talking about how there's a chance for the 15th roster spot. And I was like, that's a great mindset to have. I'm jealous because it's like I wish. I think the biggest thing in the draft was I was more annoyed that the Bulls didn't have a pick in the second round, because I was like, God damn it, I think the Bulls could have maybe wanted him. But we can't always get what we want. But the fact that Lucas has this chance, I think, is really big. We will be glued, I know for sure, to the Summer League games whenever this calendar comes out, the schedule.
It starts soon. It's like July 7th.
Yeah, they do. Well, see, the thing is, they do like a handful of ones, right? Because they do the Vegas one, they do the Orlando one. There's like, I'm pretty sure they do like three different circuits. Okay. And some teams don't do them all, and some teams do. So we'll have to keep an eye out of what the Clippers do. I was about to say the Grizzlies, and I was like, no, he said no to the Grizzlies. So, but for sure, I think even back in the day, I'm pretty sure you could play Summer League with a few different teams.
Yeah.
So now, again, I don't think Lucas has to worry about that, but I'd be very interested to see how everything works out there. And I'm, again, just absolutely excited for him, and pretty much just, and again, I don't know if we want to keep talking about Lucas, but we can talk about the reaction of Lucas's situation.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
From a certain tweet that was sent out from a certain seniority figure in the team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, Buck, if you want to let the listeners know what we saw on good old Twitter after Lucas got picked up.
Yeah, quickly, just about the schedule, I just kind of looked, Googled it real quick.
Okay, yeah, no,
it
please.
It looks like the Clippers have, at least just this one circuit, four games starting July 9th.
Ooh, nice.
And then July 12th, July 13th, July 15th. And that is in I think it's just it just says, playing four Western Conference foes in the Summer League 2022. And that is in Vegas, yeah. So I don't know if there's more, but at least four for now. Okay,
very nice. Awesome.
Were you thinking about the tweet from Drew? Is that what you're thinking about?
Very much.
Yeah. Do you have it pulled up? Or otherwise, I'll pull it up.
Oh, I do not have it. I know exactly the content of what was spoken about.
Oh, okay.
But
you go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah, it was, Coach, I'd love to play for you, but I want to see if a high major offers me. Coach, I want to get to the next level. And it to be honest with you, it was openly candid, just conversations it seems like recruits have had with Drew about how they are. I think one even said, it seems like a lot of fun, but I got to wait. Like,
I love your staff, but.
I love your staff, but. And again, I live by the rule. My greatest thing is everything before the but just really means nothing, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of just a polite way to say, I don't really want it, but here you go, right? So. I did not expect that. Now, I'll be straight here, and I'm just going to bring it in. I don't think Porter ever tweets that, ever. And I think that's just because there's a different mindset of what Drew's trying to do, and Drew's trying to make a statement of, like, you want to come here to play, you're going to come here to play. Like, there's no second guessing. There's no, like, it's a full-on commitment, not only to yourself, but, like, to the team. And I think that's what makes, in my opinion, someone want to come play for Drew. And, again, he's a young guy. He's a very, very, like, active guy on the court, and I love that. Love seeing him get down and show his, like, just show his passion for the team. So, I don't know. It's I think it's a great tweet. If anyone has an issue with it, I think you just don't know the inner workings of college basketball and how, like,
yeah.
And again, I get it. Like, some coaches can back on a scholarship, and so, like, there's always, like, multiple sides of the story. I get it. If someone were to say, well, this kid's always was offered, but then they let go of his contract now, or his scholarship. Now, I don't think Loyola really does that too much, but I don't know on the back end. But it was a very interesting tweet for sure. If that's my way of explaining it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just, like, shows, like, Drew really does have his guys' backs. And, like, he, like you said, like, he could get flack for this. I mean, he probably did from, like, other, you know, fans or whatever, of, like, other teams or something. But, like, I think it just goes to show he's really got his guys' backs. And this is just, it is a big deal for Loyola, like, for the team, for the fans, for the players, like, the staff, all that. Like, someone made it, right? Like, they did. They got to the next level. They're a professional basketball player. I mean, this basically means Lucas can play professional basketball, whether stateside or across the pond, for, like, for a long time. Like, as long as he continues to work hard, and which he will, like, it just means that he'll be a professional basketball player for probably at least, like, 5 years. I think that's kind of conservative if he wants to continue playing. So it's a big deal. It's cool to see that he had his guys back, and I think I'm sure the current guys, you know, they respect the hell out of Lucas, and, like, I think it's cool for them to see their coach, like, stick up for their guys and tout them, right, when they have something to be proud of. So, yeah, it's definitely super cool. I'm just trying to decide now whether I want a number 1 or number 24 Lucas Williamson Los Angeles Clippers jersey. Yeah, I think, yeah, I'll probably go with the number 1.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think the last thing I have to say about the tweet is, I think personally, they just it also shines a light on just the consistency of the type of players that are leaving. We'll get to Ugbuk for a little bit here, but even like Cam last year, just the consistency of guys. And now, not every guy maybe wants to or has the capability of going to play professionally, right? Like, I love, to be honest, also seeing Keith going to go start the coaching path. Like, that is really cool. And you get guys just connected to the program, both on a court or around the court. And I find that even also really, really cool. Just consistency of graduating guys and getting guys who leave the team and are making impacts on the court, somewhere professionally or in the collegiate area still. Very, very cool. Like, you have to give it, like, Clay's assistant coach or whatever over in Oklahoma. Keith now in Tennessee. London, former player on the RSS. So it's like, just now we can have names that are associated also back to us, which I find very, very unique. So just I think the tweet said a lot more to me than maybe just the words, but it was really good.
Yeah, it's cool to see. And we'll be following Lucas, obviously, on the journey. By the time the summer league's finished up, which is like 3 weeks from now or so, like, that probably will be time to record another episode. So we'll be, you know, talking about him and tweeting about him as he continues on his path to hopefully make it to the NBA. So exciting stuff. The next thing is, let's talk about some other former Ramblers. Like you said, Ugbuk, he is in Edmonton with the Stingers, which is in the CEBL. I think it's just like the Canadian
basketball.
Yeah, something basketball league. I actually heard this on the, I think it was the Bears, Blurs, and Belgium podcast with Krut and Will. He has an interesting contract where he can, if he gets an offer or any sort of deal from, I don't know if it's anywhere, but definitely like the NBA or the G League, he can opt out of his contract with the Stingers and like no issue and go kind of pursue that contract or situation, even to the point where he was able to leave his season for, I think he missed a game, Oh, no, he didn't. He didn't miss a game. But able to leave the team to go to have a tryout with the Magic, the Orlando Magic, and then come back and there was no issues. So I've never heard of that. I think that's really cool and good for him to work that out. Maybe he's able to get some sort of summer league invite. I have no idea how that mm-hmm. works, but that would be pretty cool. Otherwise, I was just going to plan on talking about his performance so far, if you had anything else.
No, yeah, I think it's phenomenal he gets that opportunity. It's interesting. You don't really see that in a kind of North American sports where, like, you could be at a lower tier team and they're kind of helping you to get to the higher tier. You see that a lot in, like, soccer. You kind of go to a club when you're young and you build up your talent and then you get kind of nearly sold off or picked up by the bigger clubs. So really great to see. But no, his performance, I can't wait to talk about I think we're all excited to talk about the one main performance that we saw.
I didn't know if there were, I've just been kind of following him, but I'll talk about his overall performance and you talk about that.
Okay.
So 11 games so far, they've played, Edmonton 6-5. So they're top half, they're in fourth. Ugbach's just starting to start in games. He started the last three games, I believe, for them. Averaging about 10 points and like 2 rebounds and 2 assists and almost a steal per game. He is their leading field goal percentage player, like qualified, because there's one guy that's played in 2 games, but he doesn't qualify. And he's shooting 49% from the field. So kind of like just typical Ugbach, although I'm kind of surprised he's only averaging 2 rebounds a game, but I think they have one of the top rebounders in all of the league. And there's someone on their team that's averaging over 11 rebounds per game.
Oh, so wow. Yeah.
Probably why. So, but yeah, what is, tell me about his shining performance.
Yeah. I don't know how I'm kind of a little shocked you missed it. His game winner.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Ugbach, man. Corner three. And it was like, and it was a shot that, again, it's a little different when you have Braden, right? And you have Lucas, and it's like, it's just a shot, the corner three. Now, here was shooting threes, so I wasn't shocked that it was a three, but just how it developed, he was just so smooth, no hesitation, just went into it, and he made a game-winning three, I think, earlier this month for the Stingers over the team from Niagara. So, then I also couldn't forget about the Niagara River Lions. What a great name.
That's awesome.
But, just Ahir Ugbach, just like, stung the Niagara River Lions with a corner three, and it was just great to see. Like, it was like, I love that he's having the opportunity to hit a game winning shot still, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. He's not done with playing basketball. And then I think shortly after that, now I was saying, I don't know if a game winning shot like that gets you that invite, but I'm pretty sure that's when I saw something on Twitter about that invite and stuff like that. So again, getting clips out there and stuff like that. There was a guy, because I looked it up right away after this, there was a guy on this team who's now on, I'm pretty sure it's the Memphis Grizzlies. So I'll have to look that up. But yeah, so like, it just, and they were promoting him on their Twitter, and he came back to the Stingers to like help with practice one day or something like that. So it seems to be a very good organization that wants their players to go to the next level. So I find that pretty cool. And again, it's great that Ahir can be back in Canada. I bet you he probably likes that, but I think I would like to see maybe the chance for him to go up the next level or even get invited. So really exciting, though, overall. Again, we're only in a few months into him probably graduating college and then now doing this. So definitely exciting times for him.
Yeah, he's already been the player of the game for Edmonton twice. I think one of his first, either his first game or second game, he had 20 points and 2 rebounds. And then more recently, at the beginning of June 8th, he had a 17.4 assist game. So,
seven, right?
We'll say it again.
You said 7.4?
17 points and 4 assists.
Oh,
and
4 assists. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So he's had a couple of great games already.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool for him. Those jerseys also are sick. I've honestly thought about getting a Stingers jersey too, because there's a B on the front. Like, that's dope. So
you got to be careful how many jerseys you're buying there.
I know. I haven't bought any. I'm the biggest. I talk the talk of like buying things, but I never purchase anything for myself because I'm like, oh, what am I gonna do with this? Hang it up on my wall? That's silly. But I am gonna get a Lucas jersey for sure.
There you go.
Yeah. The other professional Blur, former Blur, to sign a contract recently is Milton Doyle, who signed in the NBL, which is the New Zealand Basketball League, I think, and with the Tasmanian Jack Jumpers, which I think I saw. It might be their first year, Tasmania. I saw something that was like, oh, Tasmania hasn't had a team, and it's great.
They're founded in 2020.
Okay, so recent.
So they also might not have had a team in 2020 because of COVID.
Right, so it might be like their second year maybe, or third at the most.
They made their debut in December 2021, so they're brand spanking new.
Yeah, but yeah, so you signed with the NBL, which is actually a really great league. You see a lot of, at least recently, maybe not a lot, a handful of players come over from the NBL to be drafted into the NBA. Oh my gosh, why am I drawing a blank on every NBL player that has ever existed? I'll look it up. But it's great for him just to continue playing. Like I said, I think it's a quality league. They said some nice things about him, being a former Loyola Rambler, being on first team and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, no, I think the New Zealand Basketball League has been very interesting for a lot of young kids. Remember, there was that whole LaMelo Ball went out there, and then I can't think of the name that also went out there, top five talent. So a handful of young guys, and then I even think recently you've seen some guys get drafted out of there. So definitely not a bad league at all, and a league that definitely also gets NBA eyes, right? There are definitely scouts who are on those games watching. So
yeah, this year Usman Jiang got drafted by the Knicks and then shortly traded to the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he was from the New Zealand Breakers. I think there was like one other one this year, but yeah, like you said, like at least a few in the past few years. So it's definitely got some good talent. So yeah, that's cool for Milt. And then I think that kind of just brings us to our last thing, which is the Rubin twins, Miles and Wesley. They played this last year for Simeon after transferring from, I think it's Homewood Flossmoor, which is a southern suburb of Chicago, just outside the city. They transferred to Simeon, played there. They came close to winning the state title this past season. They lost in the semifinal game to Metamora, and then they play for Nike Mean Streets and the AAU circuit, which I think is EYBL, I believe. And
That's EYBL. We were watching some of their games, yeah.
That's right, yeah. We offered Miles like a good month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, something like that. And we all kind of, I mean, you and I at least, but there was some discussion on Twitter too about like, oh, that's kind of interesting. We didn't, you know, offer his brother, but Miles is undoubtedly the higher prospect. Doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be the better player, but like he is a very highly touted prospect. So we thought maybe that's why. Wesley had gotten a few offers as well, a handful of offers to like Southern Illinois, Akron. I think it was one other. I think Illinois State maybe. There was one other Missouri Valley Conference team in there, as well as like Northern Illinois, I believe, or Eastern Illinois, something like that. So he had gotten a handful of offers too, and then we offered Wesley a week and a half ago, and he and Miles both committed shortly after. Oh, and the other school is DePaul. They both had offers from DePaul.
And they both, I'm pretty sure, visited DePaul like the day before, I thought I saw.
Yeah, it was really short before.
Yeah.
So they were probably, honestly, it probably got down to DePaul versus Loyola. And I'm sure Miles was like, I'm not going to play for you unless Wesley's there. So maybe that's not how it went down, but it's how I could, you know, one option of how I could see it happening. And then we end up offering Wesley, and the rest is kind of history. So what was your kind of reaction or any takeaways from the two Rubin twins?
Yeah, I think right away my reaction was I was excited. So Mean Streets, right? We've been watching, at least I think we've been both been watching these teams in EYBL for this a lot of the sessions that have been going on, right? And Miles right away stuck out to me just because of his length. I don't know his wingspan, right? He stands of supposedly at 6'8", right? He, again, looks pretty tall to me. Could even be taller. But he just stood out a lot for me because it was like he was getting a lot of rebounds. He was there. He was grabbing the ball. He was there. And the best part was I wasn't necessarily looking at his highlights because I'm pretty sure Richard Barron is on the team who I wanted to watch. And it was like, oh, who's this guy? And we looked him up. And it was like, oh, this guy's name is Miles Rubin. And then we offered him like a few days later. And I don't know exactly which EYBL tournament it was, but it was like, oh, that makes sense. And again, the first thing out of me is that he's just so tall. And now he's not a big guy, right? He's a tall and lanky guy. Mm-hmm. So I think he really kind of, you could say, I don't even know really much of his offense besides getting to the rim. But he could look like a stretch four, right, if he had it. But he really played the center. Defense was really good, kind of rim protector. But then likes to go to the rim on offense as well. So he's kind of a dynamic. But just his length, you could really sense. And that was the biggest thing I remember from watching him. And just being there, it was, again, I wasn't looking for him. I guess that's the best example. Is like, wasn't looking for any of Ruben highlights. And then all of a sudden, he became a highlight that I was like, oh, I'm really intrigued. So,
mm-hmm. I mean, the thing that, like, sticks out for me, and we wrote about it, he is an elite shot blocker. And I don't use that word, like, lightly, and, like, I'm not trying to be dramatic. He really is, like, an excellent shot blocker. And so, you know, when you get that sort of player, who then, as Lou said, is an excellent rebounder as well, and we know is like lanky, all he's got to do is like be kind of halfway decent on offense, and you've got like at least a great mid-major player. And as far as like offensively goes, he does get a lot of his offense from offensive rebounds, but he does have a few post moves as well. He has a nice little hook shot, a righty hook shot. Him and his brother have an excellent like high low post game that I've seen them, especially in high school at Simeon. But the other nice thing is because he is tall and lanky and athletic, he's great on the fast break too, which is something we really haven't had as far as big men. I mean, Cam was okay, you know, he could get down, and if he was there and beat his defender, he would be fine. And then this past year, you know, Chris Knight, okay, right? No blazing speed or anything like that. But then with Miles, like, he really is athletic is all whatever. And that is something that we're going to see a lot of him running the fast break, alley-oops, that sort of thing, just because he is so athletic. So, yeah, the two of them are an interesting pairing. I think they are actually very different players, you know, even though they're twins. Miles, as I kind of wrote about, he's closer to a center than a power forward, and then Wesley is kind of closer to a wing player than a power forward. They can both play that position, but I see kind of that in their future is more like a center for Miles and a wing for Wesley. It's very exciting. Miles is the highest rated commitment we've had at Loyola as far as on 247 Sports goes back, which I think is like 2006 or 7 or something like that.
I'm going to confirm. I want to make sure there was one player that was pretty high, but he never ended up playing for Loyola.
Roosevelt Smart.
Yeah.
It's Miles, then Marquise Kennedy, then Roosevelt, or maybe it's Roosevelt and then Marquise.
Gotcha.
But
you're right. It's Marquise and then Roosevelt. So yeah, so Miles, yeah, top.
They kind of changed his ranking a little bit when he committed. He was a 4-star on the composite rating of 247. I don't know what's changed since then, but his composite has gone down a little bit. I don't know if they just re-rated some prospects, or maybe with him committing, they like changed something. I don't know, but he is still 3-star. He is still the highest rated recruit we've ever had. And honestly, like if recruiting websites continue to watch him, just with his size and athleticism, and as he becomes more comfortable in his body, I don't think there's any way he's going to go down. I mean, he might just stay where he's at, but I think he's got a lot of potential to fill out if he wants to go that route and get stronger. Or if he wants to continue to stay lean and skinny and add like a step of quickness, then you can really see him able to defend on like pick and rolls, pick and pop, be able to stop that guard from penetrating the paint. So lots to be excited about. I mean, we got two players to commit. We got our best rated player ever at Loyola to commit. And it's just something that, quite honestly, we haven't had in a long time, these types of players. And I think it just kind of, it gives us an insight into the type of team Drew sees us becoming, which I think is a very defensive-minded, which is something we're used to, but with length and also with quickness on the fast break. Which is a little bit different than what we've become used to. So yeah, that's kind of my, I guess, like, initial thoughts on it. I mean, we can get a little deeper if you want, but we haven't really talked much about Wesley, so I don't know if you want to talk about him or if you want to talk more about Miles or, like, whatever. What are you thinking?
Yeah, well, actually, just about the recruiting kind of rankings, right? So it's so weird to see there was that, I don't want to say massive, but there was a drop in his rating, and I just couldn't understand what it was, right? Like what came about. So maybe it was the recruitment, right? And then composites are all weird. ESPN is notorious, in my opinion, for never actually being up to date. They only update things maybe August of that year, right before these guys play. So it's a catch-22 when it comes to what recruiting website. But regardless of that, I think the tape is what kind of shows you. Like you said, whether it's their recent games with like Simeon and stuff like that, or some of the highlights we've seen being mentioned on Twitter. So it's an interesting thing for sure. I think the biggest thing for me is that both are just, well, the biggest thing is going to be these guys are now going to be, you're going to hear, they're going to be the new Clay and Ben. Because someone's going to be like, did you know they were twins? That's going to be the next thing. I already picture it. Bring out your bingo cards, because did you know the Rubin boys are twins? Which I can't wait to find out who's older, because that's going to be that's going to be a bingo box score as well. But I think the biggest thing is these they're both really tall players, and that's something that is really makes a difference. For all you know, they use that length to defend really well, right? Ahiru Gwag, I think, to this day, has probably been one of the most improved players we've had in the last 5 years, from his first day on the team to the last day. And I think the biggest thing for me is that he used that length of his and that quickness to defend. So when you mention whether it be Miles or Wes, I think just both of them have an opportunity to even decide on that kind of type of play, right? Like, Drew has dealt with guys who are tall and lanky, so he kind of knows what we could potentially do, right? Now, I don't know if they got other bags in their tricks as like, oh, well, they got a corner three or they got something like that, but I know Miles kind of has the hook. Wes, I don't really know, but I think the biggest thing is this kind of fits into a tall, lanky defender, both of these guys, and that's what that kind of excites me, because I think offense is going to be a little slow just because it's natural. Now, again, it could be really fast. They could fit in. Again, it's rare, right? Krutwig was a great prime example of freshman year. He's putting up points, right? And that's something you either develop into or you get the opportunity to develop into. But I think the something that you can do is what Lucas did is Lucas's freshman year defended and defended well. Ahir over the years got better and defended. And I think both the Rubin twins with their kind of their profile of a player, I think they really could be dynamite. And just imagine having 2 6'8" guys on a court and just defending. It's like you put them in the corner, double team someone. I think that causes a lot of confusion on the opposing team. So I'm excited for that. Just the length of guys really can tell. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic for sure. So yeah, because it's even kind of funny when you look at some of the other recruits, right? We're looking at it, like, is that I'm pretty sure West would be taller than Ty Pence, right? Now, Ty Pence for sure is a wing, kind of that I think that shooting guard, maybe small forward. But I think Wes, if you put Wes up there, like a tall lineup rotation is kind of an interesting rotation to have, because you do need in those games sometimes, you need to put the tall people in because you're just getting dominated by height, right? So it's an interesting kind of dynamic for sure.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, I think it really just goes to show like what Drew's trying to do with the team. And the, I mean, professional basketball is changing so fast to kind of positionless basketball. And I think college is on its way there too. And, you know, you definitely want a guy who has a good ball handler, right? Like a point guard. I think that position is always kind of going to stay the same. And then centers, I mean, you are even getting to the point where, like, you want someone who can guard, like, 2 through 5, right? Or at least, like, 3 different positions, like the quickness or length to be able to stop some ball types of ball handlers. And these guys are really that. I mean, like, they, like you said, like, they're just the potential is there for excellent defenders and guys that are able to switch all the time. You see that with like our a lot of our successful teams with Lucas and Ahir, and even going back to like Dante or Ben Richardson, players like that who are just like able to switch 2 through 4, 2 through 5, that sort of thing. So yeah, I think they both have a lot of potential. Miles definitely has he does have like I think an inch on his brother, at least for now. And like I said, that kind of elite shot blocking ability, which I think puts him on the board as having like a professional future, right? A lot needs to still go right, and there's lots of time between then and now, but he's definitely going to have that sort of label on him, I think, as he continues to improve. Whereas I think Wesley is going to need to take some time. I hope that he's open to like a redshirt year. Again, stuff can change between now and this time next year when he's made his way to Rogers Park and to start practicing with the team and all. But I think a redshirt year for Wes could be really helpful. And also, like, if the playing time's not there for him, just to kind of learn or bulk up or get quicker, stuff like that. And then kind of my last thought, I think, on the two signings, I've seen a discussion amongst like kind of national college basketball writers about the really like roster spots 10 through 13, right? Sort of the back of your bench being like not valuable, or like that teams can no longer find value there because those players are constantly transferring. Whether, you know, you commit to, I don't know, Duke, let's say, and then you ride the bench. Well, you were a Duke player, so if you transfer, you can go to a mid-major and start, most likely. So those players tend to transfer. And then, but for this sort of thing, I see it as, like, hopefully Wesley is that type of player, but is more than happy to stay with the team because his brother's on the team. And he knows that he'll get his time, but, you know, it might take a year or so in order to get to a spot where he is an A-10 quality player. So Loyola is getting value out of that, like, back of the bench roster spot for the, at least for the first year or however long it takes him to get to that spot where he's able to play at the A-10 level. So
yeah, I think it's interesting. Yeah, the roster spot idea of 10 through 13, like, yeah, of course it's tough, right? But I think bottom line is there's a whole bunch of scenarios. It's like, one, injury is the number one thing, especially with COVID over the last 2 years. I'm not saying COVID's going to come hopefully again, but I think the biggest thing is if you have one or two guys that are out for a little bit, like we had Kennedy out for a while, right? Like, then you're going to need, okay, well, the guy who comes after Kennedy now is Kennedy's spot. So things shift around. So those guys between 10 and 13 potentially could be you're 8-9, like, then it becomes, like, you're going to get in the – like, it's kind of crazy to say is, like, there is one or two spots that couldn't shake your way that you're in the rotation of getting in the game, regardless if it's 5 minutes or if it's 15. Like, you're potentially getting in that if you want to get your minutes and do something about it, you can make the impact. So it is – I get it. Now, again, what we technically were only down to 12 this past year, right? Or – see, again, with the extra scholarships, it was messed up. But we had Swiger, Ben, the little brother, Look at that. We've already had brothers on the team. But we had Ben. He sat out the year, right? Because I think it was like, well, you have so many other guys on scholarship. Now, I don't think we'll run into that much anymore, especially just since we had four guys return from our team. So it makes a huge difference, right? So it's an interesting situation where it depends on what Drew's vision also is for these guys that are coming in. Now, if they've talked to Wes or if they talked to Ben last year, I don't know. It was like, here's what we plan. And they agree, and that's what it's going to be. You could easily see kind of a dynamic like that evolve and become the constant, right? I think Purdue nearly, sorry, just as an example, is being that example of there were guys, there was a kid out of Valpo, actually, a top recruit, and he was like, okay, I'm going to sit the year because Jaden Ivey was younger than him. But Jaden Ivey comes in and goes, oh, I'm the starting point guard. Like, he probably didn't say that, but it's like what best fits the team at the time, I think, is also going to dictate the 10 through 13 spots. Because you have two guys redshirt, then you're down to 11. You got to also be selective of who you're redshirting, in my opinion. So,
for sure, yeah. Yeah, it's exciting stuff, and I also think it's just the game is evolving. Like, college basketball – is really changing before our eyes. I think with stuff like that, with stuff, rules-based stuff, refereeing-based stuff, it's always changing, and it's exciting. I think we can see that Drew is really trying to keep up with that, and I think the signing of the Reuben twins is evidence of that in a couple different ways, the play on the court, as well as the roster management aspect of it. It's just, I think it's a good signing in a couple different ways. So, and recruiting, just being a good recruiter, because I'm sure Miles was gonna, by the end of this AAU period, I'm sure he would get at least like a handful of A10 offers and the rest of the Missouri Valley Conference, because he is for sure that good. And maybe even a couple looks from some high majors as well.
Yeah, I think even like Northwestern easily could have seen an offer to him, especially if he wanted to stay local, that could have done that. Because you saw that with the kid who decommitted from Belmont, as a quick side note. Mm-hmm. I think it was the kid who decommitted from Belmont, local kid, probably, I think, from the Burbs, and UIC was in there, and then Northwestern drops in, and it's like, well, hey, you want to stay local, and we're Northwestern, and then he commits to Northwestern, so... There are different scenarios, and if the Reuben twins really want to stay local, I think that could have been an option for them as well. So, it just, you got to play your cards right, and I think Drew did quite well.
Yeah, me too. I think that's all we got. If anyone has any questions, like, feel free to reach out on Twitter and DM us. I can't promise that we're gonna do an episode in the next couple of weeks, because I think we're gonna stick to that sort of once every few weeks type. Thing or when there is news available, but we do have the June prospect list coming out this week, probably tomorrow, Tuesday, the 28th. It's funny because it's just kind of gotten away from me a little bit, and there hadn't been a ton of offers. There's only like two more additional offers until like last week, and then one guy committed to Pittsburgh,
The Carrington, right?
Yeah, Carrington, and then Wesley committed to us, but I think there's still four write-ups. I think it's Wesley Reuben, Miles Hede, and then
Brock also committed, so...
Right, but that one was already up there.
Oh, that was already up there. Okay, sorry, gotcha.
Yeah, and then there's two more. I've already written one of them, and I've drawn a blank on his name, but yeah, there should be about four total.
Awesome.
We'll have that. We've got two articles that went up last week. An introduction to the A10 of the coaching staff, and then the Reuben twins commitment. And then we should have a newsletter by the end of the week. I'm not 100% sure that it'll be up before the end of the week, but definitely early next week, if not Friday. So we got some stuff coming. There's a quick little bubble of news and fun stuff to talk about. And now I'm looking on Twitter, and Carlton Valentine tweeted a video of the skill work of the players at camp today after 6 hours of basketball camp. So it's always something fun.
There we go. Well, anything it's always good to talk. No, excited to talk. basketball back for a while, and again, what a filled week.
Yeah.
I don't know if Drew did this on purpose for us, but what a filled week.
Yeah, yeah, it has been. Well, thank you all for listening to a bonus summer episode, and always remember, never forget, go Blurs.